Hi there, everyone. Welcome to Ask Margot. I'm Margot de Coatsworth, and I will be your host today. I'm not going to say much by way of my introduction today because there's nothing particularly I feel to cover. At the moment, I'm feeling very strongly about writing. I'm well into writing my next book, You Are the Genie. It's interesting because earlier in my life, I never thought I had a writer in me, though I've always loved language and words. Now the only thing I want to do every day when I wake up is make my coffee and sit at my computer to write. So I want to encourage you, if you have a spark in you to do something you haven't done before, just do it. Paint that picture, throw that pot, find some knitting needles, bake the cake, draw, write, sing, dance, marry that girl. There's no better time now than this moment to discover something new that you might be very good at. Time waits for no man, and there is never a better time than now. Those are two really good sayings, I think. Time is not waiting for us, and there'll never be a better time than now. I have a saying written on my wall, "How soon is now?" It's just a reminder to me to get on with it. You're going to love today's show because we answer questions about those people who may ask impertinent questions about kiddie duties at home, about being a snob or not, and the multitude of health reasons why we should all be kissing much more. Our first question today is from Andrew, who wants to know if the current trend for children to often not be doing practical things and jobs around the house and learning hands-on the necessities of life. And he says he's wondering if this is going to affect them later in life. He says his parents encouraged all of his siblings to participate in every detail of life, from helping with housework to learning how to fix and build things to cooking and washing their own clothes when they were old enough. Andrew says he tries to involve his children, but does it really make a difference in the end, as teaching your children all these skills in life requires a lot of input from a parent, and it just doesn't seem to be a priority for so many families these days. He also wonders, is this related to less discipline and maybe boundaries, he asks. Well, I don't see why it would be related to boundaries and discipline, Andrew. I think it's a different subject. I was talking to someone the other day about homework, and she said to me that in Germany, apparently, the school day is structured for children to learn in the morning and have lunch and do their homework in the afternoon. And I know that I have seen studies where they say how valuable it is for children just to go home and do things with their parents, such as cook the dinner or tinker in a workshop or some other life skill that's just part of life. Harvard has done a study over 75 years, and they've found that children's self-esteem is much stronger and greater if they've done chores in their childhood. It seems they become more successful later in life, having better coping skills and are more confident. They included children who do chores from a young age, and that they shows that they are more connected and happier as adults. Interesting. Another study of 10,000 children showed that children grow into more competent and confident adults who do participate in chores when they're younger. I was recently thinking about children's behaviour at all ages, really, as how we deal with things in the moment. Of course, no parent ever gets everything perfectly right. But if you can take a moment when you're faced with an issue, maybe a refusal from your child to do something, or some back chat or bad behaviour, and ask yourself, if I acquiesce, if I give this wonderful child of mine what it wants because it's pressuring me, what am I teaching it? this is really important, I think. It's not just about the moment. Am I, ask yourself, am I teaching it that I will give in if it goes on and on long enough, if it pushes hard enough, if it argues long enough, or has a little hissy fit, or maybe a big one? Or if when I say that's not how it's going to be, that I'm absolute in my refusal to bend to their demand. How long will it take that child to know that when you say something, you mean it? And it's going to be that way regardless, that they won't get their own way. How long do you think they would continue in the unacceptable behavior? Well, if you're a parent, you might be rolling your eyes now at me and saying, well, it could be a long time. But I'm telling you that that time will get shorter and shorter if you hold fast, and your line in the sand will become clearer and clearer. Your word will be respected in your household. I am not saying we should quash the little spirits of our babies, or the curiosity of a child, or that we always expect perfect behavior and never to be questioned. That would just be ridiculous. None of that. I'm saying that if your child is kicking back, and they shouldn't be, then you must stand strong so that eventually they will realize that their kicking back is never going to be acceptable or work for them. I, for example, would not allow my children to storm off and slam the door to their room. I would go and get them and make them come back and leave again and shut the door quietly, because if I let them slam the door on me, they were having the last word, and I didn't think that was appropriate. I may have told you this little story before, but someone I know was looking after his small son, and the son was whinging shockingly and persistently, loudly interrupting the adult conversation for something he wanted. But suddenly I noticed it was quiet. And I said to this chap, you didn't give that child what it wanted, did you? I was quite close to this man, so it was okay for me to speak like that. And he said, yes. So, of course, the child went away. It was happy. But what had it learnt? What was he teaching the child? He was teaching that child that it just had to persist in what he wanted. And the louder and the more annoying he got, the closer he was to getting what he wanted. I'm sure I sound uncompromising in this, but you've got to start as you mean to go on, because even as toddlers, little children are naturally testing how far they can move, and you are the only one who's going to give them boundaries. We don't like it much, but we know that we all need boundaries. We need them as children, and actually we need them as adults. We need to have them with each other, the way we interface with each other. If you give your child no-go zones and boundaries and a clear hierarchy, I don't really believe in hierarchies for adults, but for children, I think it's necessary because they don't know anything and you know a whole lot more. Not everything, but a lot more. If you do a great job with your child, you'll be producing a competent, confident human being who handles life well and has great self-esteem, which is the best gift you can give them, apart from love, of course. So we've kind of covered the two subjects there, the boundaries and discipline thing that you mentioned, Andrew, and also the doing chores around the house. I know that if you set something up from the beginning, children think that that's just the way it is. So if you have a little roster or a timetable, whatever you need for them to participate in jobs so that each of your children do help you, do support you. It might be clearing the table, might be distributing the laundry, taking the rubbish out. They will just accept it and plant it early enough. They'll continue to do it while they're under your roof, and then they'll easily just step into managing that in their own lives when they leave home. Their future partners will thank you for it. Chores does sound kind of a heavy-duty word. It's not one I normally use. But we can say that children who participate in the running of a family household end up being better off for it in life. So, Andrew, I think you're on the right track. To continue, getting your children to participate will benefit you, it will benefit your household and daily life, and your children later in life. And that's a win-win-win, I believe. Our next question today is from Marlo. She wants to know how to deal with unwanted questions without appearing excessively rude, even though she would like to be excessively rude. This is something that bothers me also, Marlo. Actually, I think we've had a question like this, a little bit like this before. And sometimes I'm tempted to be rude, but I have a bit of a challenge with myself to see if I can use language cleverly enough so that I don't have to be a rude person. Normally, I'm quite good at deflecting. The other day, actually, I was asked by a chap who I didn't know, who was just making polite conversation, if someone we were speaking of rented or owned their house. Normally, this makes my blood boil, and I want to say, well, that's none of your snoopy business. I never do say that. I just think it, and then I tell other people afterwards that that's how I felt. I did pause for quite a while, and then I thought, well, he was most inoffensive, and instead of my usual response, which is, oh, why do you ask that? Which truly does make them squirm a wee bit, because there's never a valid reason. Well, I haven't come across one. So, keep that one up your sleeve. Why do you ask that? And then they have to say, oh, and think of some good reason as to why there is, that's a question they have a right to ask. I think if the question is none of their business and it will contribute nothing to their life for them to know the answer, that's something you shouldn't be answering. I told this chap what he wanted to know, and then afterwards I was annoyed with myself, and I should have just used another trick of mine, which is to answer, but not actually answer the particular question. So you say, oh, yes, that whole thing of renting and buying, it's a tricky one. What's your take on that in this current environment or in this city? Do you see you're not answering the question and you're not being rude? You're giving them the floor to kind of explain themselves, but in a non-confrontational way. So they get to answer their own question in a way. I've thought about this a little bit since that happened when this chap asked me about the renting or buying thing. The other thing I could have said was simply, I couldn't say. Only a very rude person will then come back and say, well, why can't you say? And if they do, you can just say, well, it's not my place. They can't really argue with that. We can take this one step further with unwanted conversations, and there have been an innumerable number of these around COVID, of course, where people want to engage you in a conversation, stroke debate, stroke argument on the subject. If you just aren't in the mood for it and you don't want to go there because you don't see the outcome is going to be of any value, then how do you deal with that? If they start with a statement that's controversial and maybe inflammatory, you can just say, I hear you, or I understand what you're saying, or you're not alone, of course, in thinking and or feeling that. That makes them feel heard, but it doesn't invite further engagement, and it doesn't tell them what your standards are because you don't want to tell them, or you simply don't have to. This whole thing about people questioning you is something I feel strongly about, because just because someone asks us a question or brings up a provocative subject doesn't mean you have to answer the question or enter into that conversation. You can say things like, that's not my area of expertise, or I don't have the background to be able to answer that accurately. You can say, I'm still information gathering on that. So I'm not in a position to have this conversation about it. Sometimes it doesn't hurt to run through scenarios in your mind if you've had a situation that you haven't been pleased with because someone's asked you something that you think they shouldn't have and you answered when you wish you hadn't. I think it's quite good to run through it beforehand to sort of preempt what you might say so that you're ready for a similar situation next time. I've done this with my response to people who ask something that's really none of their business by my having a comeback ready, which is my, why do you ask that question? I hope that's helpful, Marlo. I'm glad your name isn't Margot, because I like to be the only Margot in the room. And I often think, oh, how rude that someone else is having, should even think of having my name. I'm just kidding, of course. Okay, question number three. Actually, that last question perfectly leads on to our next one, which is about a story I posted on Instagram, which came from someone I know, this question. She questioned me and said, do you think you might sound like a bit of a snob? Well, I was surprised that someone who knows me reasonably well would say that, and I was sort of amused because I'm not a snob. I'm actually quite proud of the fact that I have a range of really good friends, from one who's lived a while in a garage to one who might be considered a billionaire. I don't care. I'm interested in the inner man, the person, not the externals, although all of that can be fun. It's not what gives a person substance or quality. In fact, something came up the other day, and I jokingly said to my brother, actually, oh, well, when you've got quality, you don't need pretension. I was being sort of facetious. But I thought it's absolutely true. If something is real and good and fine and quality, why would you need more than that? Why would you need to wrap pretension or, I guess, snobbery around that? I feel that the whole who's who and what you've got and who you know and what you've done and all that stuff is very tedious. And the only person and people who are impressed by that are people who need to be impressed by something that somehow they don't have enough of, or what shall I say, they don't have enough value around themselves, so they're looking for validation from others. Is that clear enough? I hope so. I'll tell you a funny story. I love this one. I remember being out with a group of friends at dinner, and one of the gentlemen at the table said something about who he knew and had had some interchange with recently. It was a president or a prime minister or something, razzle dazzle. And the other chap at the table said, oh, I think you might have dropped something. And he bent down and pretended to pick up something off the floor, and he brought his hand up and he said, oh, he said, it was just a name. It was so well delivered, that particular line. It was just a name. And so pointed. I really enjoyed it. I thought, we don't need to hear how clever you are or how much you know or who you know or what you earn or what you've got. It's just not part of what we're about. If that stuff is around you with the people you know, swap those people out and get some new ones. Actually, I did look up the definition of snob after that, and there wasn't really a complimentary one. I quite rashly, for me, posted a story, that's where this whole thing began, when I was sitting outside a little establishment having a drink, and somebody walked inside, frankly, looking like a hick. This is some terminology is coming from my parents, actually. And I said to my companion, if I ever open a foodie establishment again, I can tell I'm going to have a sign outside saying, if you look like a deadbeat, go home, think again, get changed, and come back and try again. This is what caused the flurry about my being called or suggested that I might be being a snob. The thing is it snobbish to say, make an effort, show some respect, don't come to an establishment or go to a function or an event that's trying to put themselves in front of everybody as a quality offering or quality place to meet and greet? Why would you turn up looking like a hobo or a yobbo, as we used to say, as though their efforts were of no consequence to you? That just seems rude to me. Perhaps I should write a book and call it That's Just Rude. Okay, that's enough about me. We're going to finish on our last subject for today, which is kissing. What a great subject. It's fun. Malcolm said his wife pulled him up recently because she said he didn't kiss her when he left for the day. But he says She knows I love her. And the question is, so what's the big deal? Sometimes I give her a peck on the cheek when I leave. That's a kiss, isn't it? He wants to know what I think. Of course, I'm going to tell him. I can answer that, Malcolm, possibly on behalf of all women everywhere from the beginning of time. What is a peck on the cheek or mouth? I'm sure I don't know. It holds nothing of much value in my opinion. You're not taking a proper moment for that person. You're not truly acknowledging them. It's perfunctory. I actually looked that word up just for fun. It means an action carried out without real interest, feeling, or effort. Well, Malcolm, if you are sending me this question, I know you don't want that to be you. Kiss her properly. And all of you know how to do that, or you wouldn't have had a marriage proposal accepted in the first place. So I am actually talking to all men everywhere now. If you're going to kiss, throw yourself into it and do a good job. You might surprise yourself and your wife and do a magnificent job. If you're going to leave her breathless. Imagine the welcome you'll come home to. Slippers, pipe, hot dinner, plate of cookies at the door, and your wife in something frisky, champagne in hand. I'm just playing about here, but you know what I'm saying. Input equals output. If you want more, give more. Now we're going to talk about the benefits of a 60-second kiss and a 20-second hug. This is the thing. A 60-second kiss improves health by lowering blood pressure and releasing a flood of oxytocin. And a 20-second hug enhances life expectancy by significantly reducing stress and fostering emotional intimacy, which of course we all want. There's a well-known study from the 1980s that suggests that men who kiss their wives every day before leaving for work, because proper kisses, could live up to 5 years longer than those who don't. I have heard 4 years, but when I looked this up, it said 5 years. You can argue if you want, but I wouldn't bother. I've had lots of questions recently about how to get babies to sleep. So I'm going to talk about kissing in my next episode as a way of getting children to sleep. But I was also playing with the thought of kissing therapy, because I've decided that almost anything can be turned into a therapy. And I asked my assistant, sort of tongue-in-cheek, pardon the pun, if he could give me some info on the benefits of kissing therapy. So, here we go, everybody. And this is particularly true for this question and Malcolm's query about whether it was really worthwhile. Okay, the benefits of kissing. It improves emotional connection and bonding. Kissing activates oxytocin. It's also known as the love hormone. This hormone strengthens feelings of affection and attachment, making kissing a vital activity. Vital, everybody. Both in romantic and familial relationships. In couples, regular kissing can help maintain intimacy and reinforce emotional bonds, leading to better communication and trust. That makes sense. Kissing reduces stress and anxiety. Well, anxiety we know is a kind of plague at the moment in the world. So here's a simple way of dealing with that. More kissing. It's been shown to lower levels of cortisol, which is a stress hormone, which can contribute to a sense of calm and relaxation. Regular kissing can help people feel more connected to their other person and less anxious, promoting overall emotional well-being. Number three, it boosts physical health. This is quite funny. Well, not really funny, but it makes you smile. It increases saliva production, which helps wash bacteria off your teeth and reduces plaque buildup. Additionally, it can boost your immune system by exchanging germs in a healthy, controlled manner, exposing you to new microorganisms that can help strengthen your body's defenses. Now, that surely must mean that you build up immunity for things as a couple. Number four, it releases feel-good chemicals. Oh, this is my favorite. When you kiss, your brain releases dopamine, serotonin, and endorphins, all of which enhance mood and promote feelings of happiness and pleasure. This natural boost in feel-good chemicals can help lift your spirits, and wait for it, it even reduces the symptoms of depression. So kissing is upping our natural health chemicals, happy chemicals. Number five, it lowers blood pressure. Kissing dilates blood vessels, which can lead to a natural decrease in blood pressure. This effect not only promotes cardiovascular health, but can also enhance feelings of relaxation and physical well-being. Number six, it burns calories. Sadly, it may not quite replace a workout, but passionate kissing can burn between 2 and 6 calories per minute. Over time, this adds up and can be a part of an overall healthy lifestyle. Next time someone asks you what you do for exercise, you know what to say. Number seven, it improves self-esteem. Regular affectionate touch, including kissing, can boost self-esteem by making people feel loved, appreciated, and desired. In relationships, this can contribute to a healthier self-image and more confidence. Who knew all that? It's so great. Malcolm, if you want to live a long and happy life, you know the saying, happy wife, happy life, just get your mojo on and get kissing. We'd love to hear from anyone who tries this and finds the outcome of it to be hugely beneficial to themselves and their relationship. I have to stop on this subject now. Who knows where we'll head? Malcolm, we'd love to hear back from you. This will be the time for you to all send your questions in about anything you like. Health is my thing, love and romance, kitty and family, and God stuff. Try me. Seriously though, thank you for being with us today at Fabulous Coast Access Radio. You can send questions in to admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me, Margo with a T, at margounlimited.com. I do wish you fabulously behaved and happy children, no unwanted questions, that you may never be thought a snob, and that your kisses are plentiful, meaningful, healthful, and all much sweeter than wine. We'll finish today, as usual, with the word, our message from the universe, that I'm sure someone somewhere out there is needing to hear today. Blessings, everybody. Here we go. Everything you want is indeed in the universal soup, there and available to those who choose to make it theirs. Your ease of accessing it must begin at your belief that it is your right to do so and that it is available to you. I am no respecter of persons. No one is more worthy than another. Know your value. Decide what you choose and believe that you can not just aspire to it, but achieve it. Thank you, everybody. Till next time, I'm Margo de Coatsworth, and this is Ask Margo.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.